بيبيو شوية سعبية تحكي شكتر بيوت قدام الخزان
لا شكاخ الحارة هاي
أقول لك ليش تجي
With large blue bottles in their hands, a group of women crowd around a water tanker. It's the first delivery of water to their neighborhood for days, and it's their only source of water. They are arguing. They're worried there won't be enough to go around.
We don't have any water in this area at all. We come here and only 4 or 5 households get water. For the rest, there is no water left.
There is tension, even anger. One woman shouts that people are ready to kill their neighbor for the water. They are not the only ones in this part of northeast Syria who struggle to access water. The whole region is in the grip of a severe water crisis, and I am here to find out why. I am Nama Khoshna, and this is Syria's Water Wars. It's a Life at 50 Degrees investigation for the documentary from the BBC World Service. The woman who organized today's water delivery is Fatima Zamin, who works for the local council. She is a short woman, dressed in a smart shirt, trousers and a navy blue headscarf. She listens as the women vent their frustrations, but the look on her face says that there is only so much she can do.
As you can see here, there's a shortage of water. We see that people are suffering, and we understand their concerns. But the water supply is scarce, and we don't have the infrastructure needed to deliver it to the people.
Straight away, as soon as she gets off the car, she was surrounded by lots of people, women shouting at her, and they haven't received water for 4 days. Their families, everybody's desperate. You can feel it, you can see it. So now Fatima arranged a temporary solution, at least for today, to get one of their tankers to come to this area and to give them water.
We delivered one tanker here and we gave them water. The children, the women, they're very happy. But this area is just a drop in an ocean of misery. Giving them water today, it's just a drop. The suffering continues, so the more water that's delivered here, the better it is for these people.
Water demands never stop. Back at Fatima's office, the complaints keep flooding in. One man slammed his fist on her desk, shouting in her face for water. It's something I've never seen in the Middle East. People walking straight into offices to demand things from officials.
He's been given water several times, but he comes here every day to pick a fight with us. It's very difficult because poor people come here and they complain. We had a couple of other people just before him. It's all very difficult and we suffer from this because we cannot provide the people with water.
Fatima is responsible for water in the city of Hasaka. But the problem is that the entire city has been without running water for over a year. Its 1 million residents rely on a fleet of tankers which collect water from wells outside the city and deliver it. Ahmed Al-Hamid is one of the hundreds of tanker drivers who deliver that water. He is tall and thin with a bushy beard. He's wearing a black t-shirt with the black sunglasses, always tucked in his hair. His face looks tired and overworked.
I can't cope with the demand, but I'm trying to help people. People need more water because the weather is very hot, but they can't get enough water. My phone doesn't stop ringing. Sometimes I'm forced to turn off my phone because of people calling. That's why people fight each other and argue with the driver. They shout at me, "Why don't you supply me?" Here, water is more precious than gold.
Ahmed starts his day by driving out of the city around 20 kilometers to fill his tanker at the water well pumped by diesel fuel. It's normally busy.
What can we do? We come here in the morning and wait. We wait for our turn in the queue. Our tanker's capacity is 40 barrels. We pay 30,000 to fill it, which is expensive because there's a shortage of fuel. Then we go back to the city to supply people so they don't sit there without water.
He then drives into the city to whichever building he's delivering to. There he will pull up a hose to the water tank, which is normally at the top of the building.
We park the tanker close to the building and one of us comes up to pull the hose up. I'm pulling it up now and it's breaking my back. What can I do?
Ahmed works long days. I see the toll it takes on him when we catch up late one evening.
I have no energy left. I'm getting sleepy right now while driving. I filled the tanker a while ago and I was sleeping while doing it. I'll be honest with you. I've been awake from 5 in the morning and I've been driving all day. I swear to God I've been working from 5 in the morning without eating any food or drinking any water.
This demand on the water resources is having an impact on Hasaka's reserves. The water in the wells where Ahmed and other drivers fill up their tankers won't last forever. Council worker Fatima takes me with her as she goes for an update.
We're going to visit the Shamoka district because of shortages in the water supply. We'll go to the wells there and check the levels of the water. We can meet the people running them and ask about the situation.
Each well has a metal pipe that sticks out of the ground about 5 meters. This turns downwards, and the tanker trucks park underneath and fill up with water. There is a few trucks at the wells when we arrive. Fatima sits in the shade, and one by one, the drivers come to tell her how the water levels are low. They know this because it takes them longer and longer to fill up the tanks. One man says, the water is 80% lower than the previous year. I asked Fatima if she's afraid of what will happen in the future.
Yes, it'll be a catastrophe, and I'm very worried about it. The water level dropped a little bit last year, but not as much as this year. The drop in the water level has been a lot more this year. If the water level goes down further, there will be a drought. It will be very difficult for the people. People face a disaster because they all depend on our tankers delivering. Even now, the tankers can't cover the demands of the people. So if there is a decline, then what will we do?
There is a glimpse of hope for Hasaka. During my first trip to the city in April 2024, I attended a council meeting where they were discussing a plan to dig a new series of wells in a different location.
The project in general is a project to save Hasaka.
Ammar Ragrag is a young water engineer tasked with making this project work before the hot and dry summer season in just 3 months' time. He's wearing a smart shirt and jeans and has a neat haircut and a trimmed beard.
The project is 20 wells 500 meters deep. It started a long time ago, but we really took it up seriously as a result of the difficulties we faced in collecting drinking water.
We are with the engineers as they're trying to dig the wells. Basically, they have to dig 20 wells in 3 months' time. So it's a race against time for them, but to be honest, the way that it's going, they have very, very basic equipment. I just have a feeling that those guys are desperately trying. You can see from their face the frustration. But I don't know. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't think they will meet the deadline ahead of this summer, as the authorities, the engineers in Hasak are saying that the catastrophe or the disaster about to happen.
I leave Ammar and his team to their work and hope that they can make progress before the summer, when I'm planning to visit them again. You are listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service. I am Namak Khoshnaw, and this is Syria's Water Wars. You might be wondering why a city of over 1 million people has no running water. It's complicated, but the crisis has two main drivers. Conflict, which I will get to, but before that, there is climate change. This region has been getting hotter and drier. I felt it myself coming back to Syria in August.
The weather has changed a lot. The scenery is 100% different. You can almost feel the heat. It's all grey. You can see the mirage as we drive on the road. It's really summer. It feels like summer. You can feel it. You can see it. You can experience it.
Decades ago, this region was known as the breadbasket of Syria because it produced so much grain. But in recent years, temperatures have gone up while rainfall has decreased.
The water problem is the worst. I swear to God, the water problem is the worst.
Saeed Al-Khalaf is a farmer who has been directly impacted by this change. He took me to see his old farm by the river Khabur, which used to flow with much more water than it does now.
Do you see all this area? There used to be many villages on both banks of the Khabur. Now, look at it. You can see a few houses only. All the people are gone. They used to live on the river banks, farming and owning livestock. They had cows, sheep, goats, and people used to live on that.
Saeed is in his 70s. He's wearing a white robes, a traditional red and white kafia, or headdress, and has a neat grey moustache. He stands in the hot sun in a vast open landscape where his farm and many others used to be.
This should be farmland, but now it is not suitable for farming. The climate has changed. It's so sad. Where are the people? They lived here. They were happy and healthy and had no problems at all. It's bad luck faced by the Syrian people. Bad luck. Syria is the mother of civilization. This region produced judges, solicitors, teachers. I don't know what to tell you.
You feel very sad.
Yes, definitely. It is a deplorable situation. We need help from those concerned and responsible for the situation.
He shows me to a small abandoned house. It's a traditional building made of clay, which he says it's much better for keeping cool than modern houses made of concrete. Sitting inside, he lights up a cigarette and smokes it thoughtfully.
Do you ever think you will go back to this lifestyle, everything will go back to normal, how it was?
No. It is difficult. Things will not go back to the way they were, unless God wills it. Those days are gone. Those days have disappeared, and we are in a new era. It's everything. Climate, changes in human behavior, difficult living conditions, everything. This year, the temperatures has been very harsh on us, very hot. We have never had such heat before. But as Arabs say, good things follow a hot year, and we hope this is the case. We hope this heat will be followed by goodness.
The last four seasons have seen drought in this region, And climate scientists have said this is because of man-made global warming. But there is another man-made problem that's making the water crisis even worse. Hasaka's water used to come from a large pumping station called Aluk, close to the border with Turkey. But in 2019, Turkey took control of the area and started bombing other parts of the region.
Around 60,000 people have fled their homes in northeastern Syria on the second day of a major air and ground assault by Turkish forces. Some civilians have been
Turkey
killed.
Turkey says it's protecting itself from a militant group called the PKK. They are a Turkish-Kurdish group who are fighting for autonomy in southeast Turkey. Turkey claims the group operates out of the Kurdish part of Syria. When Turkish forces took control of the area around the Aluk pumping station, the water supply to Hasaka started to come and go. Then in late 2023, the situation got even worse. What you are hearing is a video of the aftermath of the bombing of the region's largest power station, Suwaydiyeh. The BBCI investigation team has spent months looking through evidence, and we have been able to verify that Turkey bombed the Suwaydiyeh plant in October 2023 and again in January 2024. Christopher Giles is part of our open source investigations team.
When we do these projects, we look to see if we can gather data, visual evidence, so videos on the ground, satellite images that may show the destruction of different sites that we're interested in looking at in northeast Syria. And one of the things we noticed was the destruction of electricity sites. And those were electricity sites that were on the main grid in northeast Syria.
So, Chris, talk me through how you do it. What's those videos?
So if we just look at this one local media report, we can see lots of fires, an inferno, charred ground, people responding, trying to put out the damage. And this is at Suwaydiyeh Energy Facility. And one of our next steps is we'll go on a satellite imagery provider. Here we're looking at the planet imagery from the 7th of January. And if we compare that imagery with the 18th of January, so after the attack, we can see the damage and geolocate the different areas relating to the structures and buildings. In this particular area, there's a darkened spot, and that shows the damage in the area. We can also see that a big oil spill has scarred the land as well, visible from space. And what this does is it just builds that extra layer of evidence when we're trying to assess the damage to these important energy facilities.
I visited the site during my trip to Syria and spoke to one of the workers, Muhammad, who was there at the night of the bombing in January.
On the 15th at around 10 p.m., me and my friend were sitting by the turbine distribution station over there. It was our shift. Then all the windows started shaking and all the glass shattered. We thought that the attack was on our building, so we ran away and came over here and got down, far away from the scene of the attack. But the planes were attacking all the turbines one after the other. When it hit the third turbine, I felt a shell hitting my left arm. I hid myself and covered my head to avoid being hit on the head or face. My arm is broken in two places, and one of the bones still hasn't healed.
As well as affecting power across the region, these attacks devastated Hasaka's water supply. The Suwaydiyeh power station provided electricity to the Aluk water plant. And since these attacks, the supply to Hasaka has been completely cut off. Council worker Fatima took me to her home to show me how her taps were completely dry. I asked her when was the last time they had water coming out of them.
The last time was when the Turkish military attacked our oil and gas stations. It was in October 2023, and since then, the water has been cut off. When the Turkish government attacked our electricity facilities, it dealt a fatal blow to us. Electricity plays a big role in the extraction of water. When there is no electricity, the operators of the wells have to use generators. But getting enough fuel for that can prove very difficult for us.
I asked Fatima what she thinks of Turkey's claim that it's only targeting PKK militants.
No, on the contrary, Turkey attacked the society. The electricity and the oil are used by the civilian population, not only by the PKK. The civilians here do not belong to the PKK. This attack is an assault on the civilian population.
BBCI has verified that multiple Turkish attacks damaged oil fields, gas facilities and power stations in northeast Syria between 2019 and 2024. We showed our findings to legal experts. Here's Christopher again from our investigations team.
We took this to two international human rights lawyers, and they reviewed this evidence, and they told us that the Turkish actions in northeast Syria may constitute a violation of international law. One of our lawyers said that the indications that international law may have been violated are so strong that they should be investigated by a court.
We put our findings to the Turkish government. They told us that they have a right of self-defense against the PKK, that they observe international humanitarian law, and that civilian safety is their main priority. Three months after my first trip to Syria, I am back to visit Ammar Ragrag. He is the engineer leading the project to build new wells to supply the city of Hasaka. So we are on our way to meet Amr. We spoke to him the other day and apparently he is falling behind a little bit. They have issues with the machines, but also with people. The guys much prefer to work at night time because it's cooler. Just like the rest of the country, really, when day turns into night, night turns into day, simply because of the heat.
Assalamu alaikum. Hello, hello. Amr, you lost weight. Zaib boy, pichak. Germaya. Hara? Heat has made him lost weight. Yeah, he lost weight, look.
In Arabic.
ايش اقول له؟
قل ضعفان ليش ضعفان؟
ليش ضعفان رايح جاي رايح جاي
Ammar tells me that despite the setbacks, they have managed to complete 10 out of the 20 wells they need, and they are determined to finish the job, even in the face of the conflict in the region.
Our mission is to search for a water resource to meet the needs of the residents of the city of Al-Hasaka. They are our people, our relatives, and our children. The conflicts that are occurring are, of course, a scary thing. It makes us stressed and anxious, and this project may be halted as a result of these conflicts. But we have hope that it will be completed.
As Ammar and his team dig another well, water comes streaming out of the pipe and brings a smile to his face.
Water is more important than oil. If it is cut off, can you endure 4 or 5 days without water? Even if you have all the gold, if I offer you a cup of water, you'll give me all the gold you have. If you're hungry, same thing. Water is more important than oil for people. If you have a car, you can stop using it. You have a generator, you can turn it off. Most things you can do without, except water. Water is the most important thing. It is life.
Before I left Hasaka, I paid a visit to a wedding photographer who had a shop filled with hundreds of old VHS tapes from the 1980s and 1990s. He played one of the videos for me, showing the rivers flowing through the city, so vibrant and beautiful, with people dancing to a Kurdish song and having picnics along the riverbanks. I retraced the same journey with him, but now it's a completely different world. People don't have picnics here anymore. The river has dried up, and the banks are dry and dusty. The trees are gone. This city is in dire need of water. Thanks for listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service. I am Namak Khoshnaw. This episode was produced by Rob Wilson, Sephora Smith, and Christopher Giles. The editors are Rebecca Henschke and Monica Ganzi. Never Miss Syrian is our sound engineer, with original music by Felix Erskine.